Wungarelli Maginu, Georgia Steins, ABC Radio, Canberra Warragee.
Fasting is one of these things that seems to have come out of nowhere in some sense. I mean, it's been around for a long time. Don't get me wrong. Humans have been fasting for a long time, but seem to get very, very popular. And so what are the benefits of fasting, but also what are some of the things that we should be aware of if we're going to attempt to do some of the intermittent fasting? And it can come in all sorts of different ways, or there are different ways to do it. There's time-restricted eating, where you just eat between a particular time of day, or there's fasting like the 5-2 diet, or just when people don't eat for a whole day or 24 hours. Joining us to talk about this is Kate Pumper. She's a performance dietitian for the Brumbies Men and Women. She's also an exercise physiology lecturer at Canberra University. Hello.
Hi.
So if we talk about it in terms of this, just restricting your eating, what are your concerns about someone taking on a diet like that?
As you mentioned, there's a lot of different types of restricted eating or fasting, and one of the overarching concerns I would have as a nutritionist or dietitian is sustainability. So if you're someone who's actually trying to lose weight long term, how sustainable is it for you to not eat 2 days a week or only consume about 25% of what you actually need to survive 2 days a week? A lot of these sorts of diets promote that you can eat whatever else you like on the other 5 days a week. So how's that negatively affecting your health if you're not eating anything 2 days? And then you're perhaps eating really poorly on the other 5 days a week. So perhaps you might lose weight initially because you are cutting a significant amount of energy out of your diet on those 2 days. But in terms of health-wise, you might also be doing some damage in terms of cholesterol, blood pressure, heart disease, those sorts of things, if the foods you're choosing on the other 5 days are pretty poor.
It's so hard though when you look at it, because you can look at a diet and it's got recommendations like the 5-2 or the fast 800 or the time restricted eating, and they say that it does a number of things. Mm-hmm. It's hard then for a layperson to look at that and know that the other things that could be happening.
Exactly. And I think if you're looking at any sorts of diets, if it's restrictive, it's cutting out major food groups, it's making you alter significant portions of your typical daily life, then I would say it's probably not a good thing to be following in terms of its sustainability. Mm. And with a lot of these diets, people do see that initial rapid weight loss, and that predominantly comes from fluid loss. So if you, for example, cut out carbohydrates, which is a very popular way of weight loss, we store a lot of carbohydrate in our muscles and our liver. And when we store the broken down form of carbohydrate, we store fluid or water with it. So as soon as you start to do any form of exercise, or if you're moving about and limiting your carbohydrate, you will deplete your carbohydrate stores within the muscle and the liver. So you lose the weight of the carbohydrate stored within those muscles. And you also lose all the fluid that is attached to that carbohydrate. So you could see really rapid weight loss in those first few weeks. That tends to happen, or even in within the first week, which tends to be fluid and carbohydrate, not necessarily fat loss per se.
Can the argument be made, though, that someone will see that rapid weight loss and then they'll keep going?
Exactly. Like, yep, they can. The problem happens is, you know, it might be sustainable for a period of time, but if anyone has tried any sort of restrictive-based diet, there is definitely a time frame where you go, oh, I'll just do it. I'll just choose eat this meal once. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, well, I'll just change back to my normal breakfast, or I'll, even if it's a healthy breakfast, maybe having porridge, or I'm just going to add my porridge back in. And this sort of really restrictive, particularly carbohydrate or fasting diets, they're just not sustainable. And the weight loss you initially achieve, fluid carbohydrate, yes, you get a bit of fat metabolism, but you're also going to start to deteriorate your muscle as well. Mm-hmm. So you're starting to lose not only the fat mass, but you start to lose your lean mass as well. And then that has some huge ramifications in terms of sustainability of weight.
Where does the research stand, though, on what it does to your ability to metabolize? Because you'd hear that thing about slowing your metabolism down. Mm-hmm. Does it actually do that?
It does, yeah. So if you are quite restrictive, or you're not eating sufficient energy for your energy requirements, and this has been more prevalent in athletic populations over the last maybe decade, a little bit longer. Originally, it was perceived as a female athlete problem in terms of not consuming enough energy, particularly those involved with aesthetic-based sports. So think about gymnasts, diving, ice skating, anything where there is a physical appearance that's going to be judged. They may restrict their food intake, which They might do it by perhaps reducing the portion size of a particular meal, or it might be skipping meals, or it might be to that level of, say, fasting on particular days. Then what happens is we start to slow down or suppress our metabolism, which then in turn will slow down the amount of energy or calories that you actually expend when you're at rest. So you tend to hold on to your fat mass, and your muscle mass will start to deteriorate. So when we talked about body composition a couple of weeks ago, and when you're trying to change body composition, you want more muscle and perhaps less fat, restrictive diets can actually do the opposite. You can hold on to more fat and you can actually lose your muscle mass.
Could people do it and lose weight, though, because of the fact that then they eat less and then they don't need to eat as much? Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
So they reduce their appetite in a sense. Can it work in a positive way that way?
It can. If you are reducing the portion sizes, which, to be honest, a lot of people that I work with or have worked with previously, portion sizes tends to be the issue that a lot of us have. So, and our stomach actually adapts to the portion sizes that we consume regularly. So it's like a balloon. If you've ever Googled an image of a stomach, it's definitely not the nicest looking thing in the world. It's quite wrinkly and it's a bag-like, and it's like a balloon. It blows up when we put food in and it shrinks down when we digest and process that food. Now, if you're constantly putting large volumes of food within that stomach, it starts to increase in size and it actually adapts to that bigger size or volume of food. So then you need that same volume or more to get that satiety or full feeling. So that's how some people can progressively increase their portion sizes, feel like they're constantly eating or need to be eating, whereas I guess you need a bit more behavioral change and awareness of gradually reducing portion sizes so that your stomach starts to shrink a little bit. Then you'll have less volume of food to keep you satisfied.
And is that why fasting has been suggested for people who are morbidly obese as opposed to someone just wanting to lose a few kilos?
Absolutely, yeah. And there is a lot more evidence from a research perspective on these very low calorie diets for those who are morbidly obese. So if someone's having bariatric surgery, for example, they'll be put on really low calorie diets to try and have really rapid weight loss. But in terms of the intermittent fasting you mentioned before, the 5 and 2, or the time restricted eating, which is becoming, I'd say, even more popular than the 5 and 2, a lot of the research is in animal-based studies. And we know that they can be effective in some animal-based studies, but even though we are animals, we're not mice, and we have very different physiological makeup to mice. And so there is a bit of a – we can draw some aspects of, and ideas from animal-based studies, but they haven't been done to the same extent in humans. So the physiological – detriments or positives, I guess, in humans are still yet to be determined. But the suppression of metabolism is definitely one we know exists from food restriction. The most common one, or the one which has shown most benefit in animal-based studies, tends to be that 8 hour that you're consuming food within that 8 hour period. And some of those rat studies have actually shown that the composition of the food that you actually take in doesn't seem to matter. There has been a few studies published in the last maybe 1 or 2 years that have shown it doesn't matter in terms of weight loss, and also some cardiovascular outcomes as well, like your blood pressure, cholesterol and so forth. But they haven't been done in humans adequately.
And also, if you are fasting for 16 hours and you're only eating for 8 hours, you've got to be really careful what you're eating in that 8 hours, don't you?
And it also depends on what you do as a job, whether that's realistic to eat in 8 hours, and also whether you have a really physically active job, or whether your job is an athlete, then sometimes restrictive-based eating is not going to be the most effective way for you to function to achieve all the things that you need to in a day.
And particularly if you're a heavy exerciser, which we'll talk about in a moment for people who are burning a lot of energy and what they need to be careful of. Because you mentioned that before, the sustainability of doing something like that, particularly if you want to socialise or eat with the family and do those sorts of things.
And that, with food, it should be enjoyed and you should be able to be social. So if you have work functions or you have birthday parties and dinners, you don't want to be the person who's not eating at the table or not being able to engage, you know, in a social activity that involves food. So you want to have something that's sustainable for long term, depending on what you're trying to achieve. Again, are you just trying to maintain weight? Are you trying to just improve your cardiovascular health where, you know, weight's not a focus at all? So the types of things that you can do would, and the foods you consume would change depending on each individual.
Do you remember that old saying that was breakfast like a king? I think it was lunch like a prince. And then dinner like a pauper. Does that ring true, though, to have your bigger meals
Not necessarily. It really does depend what you do during the day. Yeah. But some people cope quite fine with having food in their stomach when they go to bed. Again, with athletes, because that's the dominant population I work with, I always encourage them to have around 40 grams of protein before they go to bed, because I know that's going to help with their lean mass accretion or their muscle accretion and retention and building overnight. So they do go to bed with something in their tummies, because I know that's going to help them from a recovery perspective.
But that's high protein as opposed to carbohydrates?
High volumes, yeah. But also that the myth of, you know, no carbohydrates after 5 is total myth. There's no evidence at all that if you consume carbohydrates after 5, then it's going to, you know, carbohydrate just doesn't turn to fat if you eat it after 5 p.m., which I think it's not as simplistic as that.
But does it depend on the carbohydrate too?
It depends on the stores. So if you've been really active all day and you had, say, a big pasta meal at night, if you have depleted your carbohydrate stores during the day, if you've fasted all day, for example, and then you have a big carbohydrate loaded meal, well, you're actually going to store most of that carbohydrate in your muscle and your liver. And also your brain functions off glucose. It feeds and it's sort of very greedy and it takes the glucose to use that. So in that sense, no, you're not going to be, metabolizing or shifting any of that carbohydrate into fat. It's when people eat excessively, and that goes back to the portion sizes. And again, if you eat too much fat, too much protein, too much carbohydrate, then that's what's going to in turn lead to overall increase in weight or fat mass gain. It's not just eating excess of carbohydrate. In a Western diet, we tend to, though, eat in excess carbohydrate, rice and pasta, particularly in an evening-based meal. So that's where I think it gets that bad rap from. Mm. And it's not that the food is poor. It's that we have less self-control on those sorts of foods in the evening meal when we would tend to consume them.
And that's when you talk about the portion control is so valid, isn't it?
It is.
Because I remember being shown by a dietitian the size the protein should be and the size the pasta should be. That's certainly not the serves you get in most restaurants.
We have distorted portion sizes. And I think if anyone's travelled also outside of Australia to America, for example, the portion sizes are astronomical there in terms of what they are offering. You know, you could, in a lot of cases, you could buy one meal and that would be more than sufficient for two, sometimes three people.
If you think that people should be having carbohydrates, say at dinner, what carbohydrates should they be having and what is the portion size?
So lower glycemic index carbohydrates are going to be better. And what I mean by that is lower GI or glycemic index carbohydrates break down slower. So that means they give you more of a slower release of energy rather than just quickly breaking down and not giving you any nutritional value. So a good example is your white bread or say your lollies, glucose, that breaks down super fast. And a lot of your listeners may have experienced a sugar high from consuming perhaps a lot of lollies at periods of time. So you get that quick, rapid enhancement in maybe cognition, brain function, and also energy, but then you get that rapid dip off as well. So that's a high glycemic index food. It gives you that quick high, I guess, before you hit that crushing low. And the lower glycemic index foods are your whole grains. So things, whole grain, even whole meal or whole grain rice, whole grain pasta, sweet potatoes can be really good. So those sorts of carbohydrates that are less refined and perhaps less processed in some instances, those sorts of things are good to be consuming at the evening meal. Mm. Portion size wise, depends on the size of the individual. But if you're looking at a female who is perhaps, I think the average female height-wise is about 163 in Australia or 164 centimetres tall from the last sort of census data, I think. And, you know, the weight, our weight has of the Australian population has been increasing. But let's just go mid-60s. You probably should be having maybe half a cup to maybe one cup of one of those of pasta with your meal. Whereas I would challenge anyone who's listening to sort of maybe if they are cooking a rice or pasta dish, put that cup in your bowl and then see whether that's something that you would have realistically eaten in the past. And most people would be having 3 or 4.
And would you suggest, though, that if someone is considering it, they do that with a doctor?
Absolutely. As
opposed to picking up the book.
Absolutely.
Or reading something
Absolutely.
Online.
Yeah. And, you know, if it's someone, if you do have a lot of weight to lose and you're thinking about doing this, like go to the GP, get a blood test and have a look at your cholesterol, your blood glucose levels.
It's been fascinating. Thank you so much for your time.
No problem.